Entitled The Story of Kulbeena, and today we are on text 38. Evam Krishanta Rishayo,
Evam Krishanta Rishayo,
Evam Krishanta Rishayo,
Evam Krishanta Rishayo,
Dhavatam Sarvato Disham,
Dhavatam Sarvato Disham,
Dhavatam Sarvato Disham, Pamsu Sammichito Bhurish, Pamsu Sammuthito Bhurish, Choranam Abhilam Patan, Choranam Abhilam Patan, Evam Prishanta Rishayo,
Evam Prishanta Rishayo,
Dhavatam Sarvato Disham,
Pamsu
Sumuthito
Bhurish,
Choranam Abhilam Patan,
Evam
Prishanta
Rishayo,
Dhavatam Sarvato Disham, Pamsu Samuthito Bhurish, Choranam Abhilam Patan, Evam, thus, Vrishanta, while considering, Rishaya, the great saintly persons, Dhavatam, running, Sarvata Disham, from all directions, Pamshu, dust, Samuthitaha, arose, Bhuri, much, Chorana, from thieves and robes, Abhilampatam, engaged in plundering. When the great sages were carrying on their discussion in this way, they saw a dust storm arising from all directions. This storm was caused by the running of thieves and rogues who were engaged in plundering the citizens. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, thieves and rogues simply await some political upset in order to take the opportunity to plunder the people in general. To keep thieves and rogues inactive in their profession, a strong government is always required. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatam Aham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we are continuing the discussion on the story of King Vena, and this chapter is actually about to come to an end, and in the next chapter we will see how Prithu Maharaj and his eternal consort Archi will appear very soon. So we are almost at the fag end of the chapter, and we see how the Bhagavatam is always very instructive in terms of not only devotional life but also how saintly kings should be and how they should not be. And King Vena is one such example in the Bhagavatam, where the Bhagavatam is instructing how kings should not be, how a government should not be led by the king. So this is a classic example of a king who was not following the Brahminical advice, not following scriptures, and then we see how his fall down happened because of he not following all that. So in the previous times, like in Satya Yuga and all, there were no laws, there were not many kings and all that. There was not so much governance required because people themselves were so sattvic, so much situated in the mode of goodness. They knew dharmas very well, they knew the shastras very well. So they knew how to conduct themselves. They were very responsible, being in the mode of goodness. So it was very prevalent at that time, no systems, no processes, nothing was there at that time. And if we compare that to today's Kali Yuga, we see that there are so many systems in place. We see there are organized processes. Like even if you go to a hospital, they will have so much paperwork, everything will be very organized before the doctor will actually tell you a diagnosis. They will go through all the steps. You will be conducted to so many, doing some tests and all these things, some procedures and all. And so much paperwork will be done and only then the doctor will diagnose and tell you what has happened or what is the problem with you. So many systems in place, so many processes in place, but we still see there is complete chaos. In the world today, in Kali Yuga, there is complete chaos when we think about the governance. We see what is happening with terrorists, with ISI, even in US, everywhere we see there is so much chaos in terms of governance. So although we have such beautiful systems, processes, everything in place, but because the intentions behind the processes is not correct, that is why this chaos is there. So systems are not important, but the intentions behind the system is very important. And that is what we see which happened with King Vena also. His intentions, he was able to keep thieves and rogues at bay. Earlier in the chapter we discussed that how when King Vena was put on the throne by the saintly people, all the thieves and rogues in the kingdom got very scared. Because he himself was such a hard-hearted and cruel person. So they knew that he's going to mete out a very harsh punishment to us. So they all hid in various places. It's described in the Bhagavatam. So although he could keep them at bay, but it was not backed by correct intentions. So we'll talk a little bit about what is good governance. And I was reading an article on the internet as well. So a good governance or government, in order to run successfully and in the best interests of people, it is very important that a good governance has core common shared values. So not only the government or the ruling party, but even the citizens are aligned with those core values or those shared values. And we know what is the shared values or what is the common goal which everyone should work towards. And that is working towards the pleasure of Krishna, of Lord Krishna, or spiritual realization. That is the common goal which not only the citizens but the government also works towards. And Prabhupada gives that example. Prabhupada says that when people throw stones in the river, it can create ripples. And if the people are throwing stones in different spots in a river, then it will create those rippling circles, but all the circles will collide with each other because the center is not common. So that is why Prabhupada says that a good governance means the stone is being thrown, everyone's stone is being thrown in the same center so that all the circles are coinciding with each other. And that is what a good governance entails, that you have common shared values and everyone knows that yes, the goal of life, the common goal which all of us have to achieve is to work towards spiritual realization and the pleasure of Lord Krishna. So that is one very important aspect and that's like at the core of good government. And then obviously there are other aspects as well. So a good government should also protect the Brahminical layer. They have to show respect to the Brahminical layer. They have to promote Brahminical culture in the kingdom. But if a good government is not doing that, then obviously there are going to be problems, which we see nowadays in Kali Yuga. No Brahmins are being protected. Vaishnavas are not being respected. And that is why we see that no good governance is there in the countries. And when we say Brahminical layer should be protected, means they should be allowed, they should be having the freedom to do yajnas. Because if they are performing yajnas properly, then there will be obviously annadvanti bhutani. There will be enough rainfall to then sustain everybody's life. There will be enough agriculture, there will be enough food grains for everyone's sustenance. But if that base or the foundation is not allowed by the government, then things are going to have a rippling effect and things are going to crumble because they are not allowed to do their yajnas, they are not allowed to do their preaching, they are not allowed to do their worship. So we will see that there will be an effect of that. And also the government should promote a natural way of life. And that is integral with promoting the Brahminical culture. Because if Brahmins are able to do Yitya Yajnas freely, then obviously there will be enough rainfall and then people will be able to live a natural life because there will be enough food grains for everyone. But we don't see that happening nowadays in Kali Yuga. In fact, in Kali Yuga, there is so much of industrialization that is being stressed. In fact, Prabhupada in many places in his purports, he writes that people, you will not be able to feed people nuts and bolts. You create so many factories, you create so many products, but will you be able to satisfy people's hunger through those products or through those nuts and bolts? So Prabhupada always used to stress how agriculture should be at the base of any government. But that is not being promoted. There's so much of industrialization, and what is happening is there is so much of artificial need of sense gratification which is being promoted. So we see there is, you know, there is an artificial need created that you cannot survive with this, but without this particular product, you cannot survive without this particular system, you cannot survive without this particular gadget. Because of industrialization and to promote that, artificial needs are being created in the society. Now, you know, we take the example of a cell phone. So some of us who were born in 70s and 80s, our whole childhood and most of our youth was without a cell phone. There were no cell phones at that time in our life. But our life still continued and we were quite happy. We weren't morose thinking, oh, I'm not having enough, you know, to do. But nowadays, we cannot think of life without a smartphone. I understand there are many benefits, but how much, if we analyze and see how much we have become dependent on smartphones or any other gadgets, and this is all because of industrialization, not having agriculture as the foundation of what a government should do, and you know, creating this artificial need that you cannot survive with this gadget, without this gadget, and it's being promoted in Kali Yuga by modern government. So if we compare that good governance principles where everyone should have core common goal, which is worshipping Lord Krishna and attaining spiritual realization, Brahminical layer should be protected and promoted, Vaishnava should be respected and given the freedom to carry on their spiritual activities, and also natural way of living should be promoted, Yajna should be allowed. So these are some of the components of good government. But now if we compare this to King Vena, whose pastime we are discussing, in the earlier verses we saw, as soon as he came to the throne, he completely stopped all the Brahmins from doing any yajnas or any Vedic activities. He actually went and stopped all that. He used to go around on his chariot. Everyone used to tremble when he was going around on his chariot. And he would not allow any Brahmins to do any Vedic activities or yajnas. He completely stopped that. So he was not at all following. And when the Brahmins went and approached him, all these saintly personalities went and talked to him that, you know, you have to align with, we are here to give you advice, worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, rule the kingdom in that way. He actually derided them and he told them that, what are y'all talking about? Y'all don't know the religious scriptures. It is said that all the demigods and all the lords, Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, everyone resides in the body of the king. So I am actually the Supreme Lord and all of you should be worshipping me. That was the advice he was giving, like counter advice. Instead of taking advice from Brahmins, he was giving advice to all the Brahmins. So we see that he did that. He was completely falling short of all these shared values and common goals of worshipping the Lord. Absolutely no regard for scriptures, no regard for Brahminical layer. And because of that, the saintly persons, a few verses ago we saw that they had to kill him. They had to overthrow him and they did not use any weapons to do that. They actually overthrew him they killed him just by the chanting high sounding mantras. That's how they killed him. They had no other choice but to kill him because of all his activities. And we also see that there is an example of in the 9th canto of King of Parshuram, the Lord when he incarnated as Parshuram. There's a very beautiful verse which I came across. It's in the 9th canto, 15th chapter. 15th verse, where it describes what were Parshuram's activities, and it ties in with what King Vena was doing. So it says in that verse that when the royal dynasty, being excessively proud because of material modes of passion and ignorance, becomes irreligious and ceases to care for the laws enacted by the Brahmins, Parshuram had to kill them. So similar pastime, same like King Vena had to be killed by all the saintly persons, Parshuram had to kill all these Kshatriyas because they were also not following Brahmanical advice, and they had completely degraded to the mode of passion and ignorance. Now such overthrowing we have seen is also there in the modern days. In recent times we have seen where people become so frustrated or fed up of the government, they actually want to overthrow that government. So we see there was the example of Queen Mary Antoinette. She was the last ruling queen of France. But then there the French Revolution happened and she was overthrown by the people. And she was so disconnected from the citizens at that time, that because there was so much poverty, so people took the problem to her. And they told her that, you know, there's so much poverty, there's no bread, because for French people, bread is the staple food. And they said, there's no bread. And she said, oh, let them eat cake. Someone doesn't have bread to eat, where are they going to obtain cake from? But that is how her disconnect was from her citizens. She was absolutely not at all involved in their lives. And because of that, there was a revolution, people were frustrated and they overthrew her. So she was the last ruling queen. After that, all these kings and queens, there was no monarchy after that in Europe. And we also see in recent times, we see Colonel Gaddafi in Libya, how he was also overthrown because he also was not ruling the kingdom. Even Saddam Hussein, you know, trying to be a very strong government but a very tyrannical ruler, and he met his end. He had to be killed. So people are overthrowing. Even in modern days, when people become frustrated with the ruling party or the ruling government, they actually, you know, there's an uprising, there's a revolution, and people actually take the action of overthrowing those people. So therefore, the part of a good government is to have these core values and also have a good system or a structure which backs up these core values. Because we might have these core values, but if there is not a good structure which can facilitate these core values, then again it will be difficult to implement them in society. And when we talk about proper structure, we are talking about the Varnashram Dharma. So in the Vedic times, the Varnashram Dharma was very properly executed. And therefore it was easy for people to follow these core values and to work towards a common goal of spiritual realization. But nowadays there is no such structure, so it becomes very hard for people to do that. In fact, it is said that the Varnashram Dharma was so designed that everyone does just their duty in the society, and because they were adhering to that structure of Varnashram Dharma, there was so much free time they had to pursue other things in life. And because of that free time, they could devote so much time in their life to pursuing spiritual goals, to worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if we compare that to today's system, today's like Kali Yuga modern system, in Kali Yuga, everyone is busy. Artificially busy we have all become. And you know, I'm talking about myself also. Everyone's running in Kali Yuga. There is no time people have to devote to any spiritual life. And because of that, there is no priority which is given to spiritual life. Because of this artificial busyness which we all have put ourselves into. In fact, I think it was in Melbourne when Srila Prabhupada was driving past in a car in the city, and he saw, like, you know, when in the city we see in the morning, especially around 8, 9, we see throngs and throngs of people rushing to offices. And when Prabhupada saw that, Prabhupada actually had tears in his eyes. And Prabhupada was feeling so much compassion for these people who were, you know, artificially busy in the struggle of life, that he said that actually their spiritual father, Krishna, is waiting in the spiritual world, in Golok Vrindavan, with open arms to welcome all of them. But look at them, they have turned their backs from their spiritual father and they are keeping on struggling in this material world for their existence. So Prabhupada felt a lot of compassion. But that is what is Kali Yuga. There is no Varnashram Dharma. All, you know, everyone's duties are mixed up and everyone is just working like hogs and dogs, struggling very hard and keeping themselves as you know, supposedly busy, and no time for spiritual life. You know, even in book distribution, we see that, you know, you try to stop people and no one has time to stop because they are busy. And the priority is not even there for spiritual life. So then they don't want to devote time for that. So when the Britishers came to India, you know, before they had sent some Britishers to lay some groundwork on how they can overpower and start ruling over India. So the first time when the Britishers came to India, there were two things which amazed them during those times. We are not even talking, you know, in the Vedic times. This is just few hundred years ago when the Britishers came to India. So there were two things which amazed them, that there was free distribution of food. And there was free distribution of education. So just a few hundred years ago also it was prevalent in India that the Britishers came and they saw that it was still going on. There was Annadan and Vidyadan and it was completely free for everyone, for all the citizens. So there was no struggle for food or education. Now if we see today's struggle, most of the struggle is for food and education has become so expensive. Like I was just speaking to an international student last week who has come down to study over here. And I think aerospace engineering or something like that he's doing in La Trobe University. And his whole course is going to cost him $100,000. So if we convert it into Indian rupees, 52 lakhs is gone. His whole course is going to cost him that much. So education has become so expensive nowadays. And because education is expensive, food is expensive. We see that if you see the price of technology, year on year on year, the price of technology keeps reducing. I remember a few years ago we had bought an MP3 player. We used to have those little MP3 players a few years ago. And we bought that for our relatives. And that time it was costing $100 for one small MP3 player. I think of 4GB or something like that. But now, if you see, technology prices have gone down so much. So food prices are going up and up and up. If you go to Kohl's, Safeway, market to buy fruits, vegetables, one avocado is $3. So food prices are going up, but technology prices are coming down. And that is all because of this artificial need of sense gratification and industrialization in Kali Yuga. But in few hundred years ago, the Britishers were amazed to see that India was able to sustain, because India was a very rich country. And they were able to sustain free distribution of food and free distribution of education. So because those two struggles were not there in people's life, they were able to devote so much of their time for spiritual realization. So much of their time to finding out what is the goal of human form of life, how to achieve that goal, how to please Lord Krishna. They were able to free some time. So in Varnashram Dharma, and that is what is lacking. In Varnashram Dharma, we see everyone is happy doing their own jobs. Brahmanas doing their own job, Kshatriyas doing their own job. But nowadays it's all mixed up. And Brahmins are actually, if you see the structure at that time, during when Varnashram Dharma was prevalent, Brahmins are actually the owners, because if you see, everything was donated to the Brahmins. Even when Lord Ram was ruling, so much of donation, so much of charity to the Brahmins. So the Brahmins would own so much, but they should never show control, or they should never control things. They have to be detached and guide the Kshatriyas who are actually ruling. And the Kshatriyas should control things, that is their duty, to control and protect the citizens and rule the kingdom. But they should never consider themselves as the owners. So Brahmins own things, but they should not become controllers. And Kshatriyas should control things, but they should never consider things belong to them. The kingdom belongs to them, the land belongs to them. It is all for the citizens. That is how the Kshatriyas should rule. And if this combination is correct, then there will always be good governance in the society. But if we compare that to today's modern political system, people are just interested, especially the politicians are just interested in filling their own pockets. Billions and billions of dollars scams we hear, you know, especially in India. We see so much of the politicians, no one's interested in actually satisfying the citizens, understanding what the citizens' needs are. But they are just interested in filling their pockets. But actually it should be opposite. They should not consider themselves owners of the wealth of the kingdom. In fact, Srila Prabhupada was saying that during World War II, like talking about politics and how politicians are not interested in the spiritual emancipation of society. So during World War II, the government had created an artificial famine and there was complete shortage of rice that was created during World War II. So it's not that there was no rice in the countries. But the government had created that shortage so that people would join the army just to get some rice.
Black market.
So there was, like black market. So there was abundant supply of rice, Prabhupada says in one of his purports. There was abundant rice lying, but the government completely locked it up. And then they said, oh, there is no rice, there is artificial famine, you know, it's not available, what to do? So Prabhupada always says, in some countries there is so much of hoarding of food grains, and they sometimes throw it into the oceans because they have excess food grains. And then we see there are starving countries where they don't have enough to eat even one meal in a day. So this is all part of bad governance. You know, the government not looking after the needs of the society quite well. So because of this reason, people would join the army because there was no rice, and rice is the staple food, especially in India. So people would join the army because in the army they were given rice. So the government wanted people to join the army so that they could participate in World War II, and that's why they did all this, shortage of rice. Now how much do you think it will sustain? If someone is joining the army just so that they get rice to eat, is that the correct intention because of which they are joining the army? No. The correct intention for joining the army is they want to serve the nation, they have that Kshatriya spirit, that's why they want to join the army. But here the intention was just to eat rice. So obviously it was not going to sustain for long. So a religious government will definitely be against such things like creating artificial famines or droughts. And we see this during Dashrath Maharaj's time. There was a drought for 12 years when Dashrath Maharaj was ruling. There was no rainfall. Somehow, you know, it used to happen even in Vedic times. No rain had fallen for 12 years. But it is said that Dashrath Maharaj was such a good king and so much interested in the citizens' welfare that for the first 11 years, he could supply free food grains to all the citizens without any problem, even though there was a complete drought and famine. The citizens did not have to suffer at all, and the Dashrath Maharaj kept supplying them food grains and fruits, vegetables, whatever for their sustenance. So this is how a good government is. They have the spiritual and material interests of the citizen at heart. And that is what was there in the Vedic times, during Dashrath Maharaj's time, so that people don't have to struggle. Now if there is a drought or famine in today's world, how much the struggle will increase for people? And we see that today's government doesn't support farmers. Even in Australia, the figures are mind-boggling of farmers committing suicide. And why do farmers have to resort to that? They are committing suicide, especially if there's been no rainfall, they haven't been able to grow a crop properly, or because of artificially increasing the prices and all, the farmers are not able to sustain themselves. So many farmers are committing suicide in Australia. And this is because the government doesn't have, like, a good governance means agriculture and cow protection. You know, we see Krishna has a cowherd stick, so that means it's cow protection, and Lord Balram has a plough, which stands for agriculture. So these are the two main sustaining duties of the government. But nowadays modern government is not supporting, and that is why farmers have to resort to these extreme means of committing suicide and all. Now, so we see that it is the government's duty to provide the basic necessities so that they don't have any anxiety. And we see that in India, especially current government, is quite supportive of the Vedic culture and quite supportive of religious culture and quite supportive of agriculture and cow protection. So Narendra Modi, who is the current Prime Minister, he has banned beef in many states. Like I am from Mumbai, so I know in Maharashtra he has banned beef completely. So no cow slaughtering, no eating the meat of cow, which is a very good step, you know, in terms of the government. And also he completely closed all illegal abattoirs which were there in the country. So you can have organized, because meat eating is part of the society, and Prabhupada also said we have to recognize that need. So there are legal slaughterhouses are allowed, but all illegal slaughterhouses he closed down just to curb meat eating in society, and especially eating of the meat of cows. And also he's, you know, quite favorable and quite conducive to the Bhagavad Gita. Many times he quotes from the Bhagavad Gita. And I think recently someone had circulated a video on WhatsApp. I think it was his birthday or some, on Gandhi Jayanti Day, on 2nd October. 41 nations participated in singing the song, Vaishnava Janato Ene Kaye, the Narsimha Mehta song, which Gandhiji was very, it was one of the favorite songs of Gandhiji. It's a Vaishnava bhajan by the saint Narsimha Mehta from Gujarat. And that song was sung by 41 countries. So every country participated in singing that Vaishnava bhajan. And it was presented to Narendra Modi on Gandhi Jayanti Day on 2nd October. So, you know, it gives us so much pleasure to see that, you know, some steps are being taken by the government to stop meat eating or to curb, you know, the beef production, cow protection. You know, so much efforts are being taken. So also, you know, we see the government needs to do this, but the government also has to be held accountable for their wrong actions. And we see how King Vena was held accountable. The saintly personalities were so strong that they were able to hold the government accountable. But nowadays, you know, most of the politicians in the current ruling parties, no one is accountable. They will just do freely whatever they want. And whom are they accountable to? Taxes keep on increasing, but are the citizens able to do anything? We just have to comply with whatever rules the government puts down. So they are not accountable to anybody. But in the Vedic times, and you know, in good kings, they were accountable to the Brahmins. They were accountable to their citizens. And we see, we read, you know, Parshuram's, the verse in Parshuram's story. How all the kings, the Kshatriya kings were accountable for their actions. And because their actions weren't good, Parshuram had to take the measure of killing all of them. And we also see in Krishna's pastime, even Lord Krishna used to consider himself accountable to his citizens. So recently we studied the Shyamantaka jewel pastime in our Bhaktivedanta course with Keshav Prabhu. And Shyamantaka jewel was actually, you know, taken by Satrajit's brother into the forest. One lion killed him, and that is why the jewel was lost. Jambavan took it into his cave. But rumor started spreading that it is Lord Krishna who has actually stolen the Shyamantaka jewel. And because these rumors were there, even, you know, Krishna's personality was tainted by these rumors. He actually took steps to clear his name. He was held accountable by the citizens. So he actually took the efforts to go into the forest, find out where the jewel is, fight with Jambavan, get the jewel back and give it back to Satrajit, just to clear his name. So this is accountability. The government needs to be accountable for his actions. Even Lord Ram, he was also accountable to the society. He actually banished Sita just because he wanted to, some of the citizens questioned his act. So he was ready to banish Sita because he felt that he is responsible to answer the citizens of his kingdom. In fact, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was giving a very nice seminar. And in that seminar, he was saying, like we mentioned earlier, that, you know, people don't consider, the ruling parties and the government sometimes don't consider themselves accountable. And that is why we see all revolutions and uprisings happening. Because they don't answer the citizens, they don't take proper actions and don't show proper responsibility towards the welfare of the citizens. So especially he was talking about the revolution in Europe. So earlier there was monarchy in Europe, like we said, you know, Queen Mary Antoinette and King Louis IV or something like that, they were ruling, they were the monarchs of Europe, of France. But because they were, and that time they were guided by priests as well. So in the Western world, especially in Europe, there was monarchy which was being guided by priests. But then what happened? The priestly layer started becoming very corrupt and they started becoming very exploitative. And because of that, the monarchs actually overthrew the priests. It was the opposite of what we see in Vena's pastime. In Vena's pastime, the saintly priests and personalities are overthrowing the king. But in this case, the monarchs were ruling and the priests became corrupt. So that's why the monarchs had to actually overthrow them. And in fact, the entire Church of England was overthrown by the king who was ruling in England at that time. So these uprisings and revolutions have happened in the past when the government doesn't consider itself accountable. So there was the French Revolution, like we spoke about people, you know, uprooting Mary, Queen Mary Antoinette. And that was done by the Vaishyas. The whole French Revolution was by the Vaishyas because they felt that the monarchs are not ruling properly. So they overthrew the government. And then later on, we also see in Russia, there was the Tsars who were ruling at that time. And they were overthrown by the communists. So we have seen that people overthrow, they do rebel and they overthrow these governments. But Prabhupada mentions in the Parshuram pastime, in one of the purports, he says that, you know, after overthrowing these governments, the problem is that a proper government is not installed after that. So they install, after overthrowing the monarchs, they install third and fourth class men on the throne, or, you know, for ruling the people. And because of that, what happens? These third and fourth class men who are, you know, worse than Shudras, not in the mode of goodness, completely in the mode of passion and ignorance, obviously there's going to be chaos. They will not be able to lead people towards the common goal of good governance, which is spiritual realization and worshipping the Lord. And this is what has happened. Overthrowing the government, we see King Vena was overthrown by the saintly personalities. But then the saintly personalities were concerned. They saw there is no ruling king, because of which the thieves and rogues are plundering the citizens. So then they again took the responsibility of getting a good king installed. So it will come in the next few verses how, because Sunita, the mother of King Vena, had preserved his body, they actually take the thigh and they churn that, and one short man, a dwarf man, comes out who was the head of the Nishida class. And after that they churn the arms of King Vena. And from there, Prithu Maharaj and Archi, his eternal consort, who are expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Goddess of Fortune, they will appear. And then they install him on the throne. So they overthrew King Vena, they saw there was a problem, and then they installed a good government or a good king on the throne. But you know, in the modern days there are revolutions, but a good government is not installed on the throne. They install third and fourth class men on the throne. So it is very important that, you know, the duties, Kshatriyas, Brahmins, everyone performs their duties with detachment. That combination is very important, because if the Kshatriyas become too attached and they perform their duties but they are too attached to that king or to that throne, then it will again lead to chaos. And we see that in the example of Dhritarashtra, for example. He was doing his duties well, but very, very attached to his adharmic son, and also very attached to the throne. Somehow or the other, he himself wanted to be on the throne, or he wanted his own sons to be on the throne. And we saw the chaos it led to. Millions and millions of people had to be killed in the Kurukshetra war, just because of Dhritarashtra's attachment. So that combination is very important, that Kshatriyas do their duties with detachment and Brahmins also do their duty of guiding the Kshatriyas with detachment. And we see this example being perfectly followed in the life of Shivaji Maharaj. So Shivaji Maharaj was a saintly king who was there not long ago, a few hundred years ago probably he was there. And he was ruling in Maharashtra. And we've learnt about him a lot in our history when we were in school. So Shivaji Maharaj was a great king. He's still considered as a great king. And why he was considered as such a great king was because he was always guided by two saints. One of the saints was Ramdas Swami and the other one was Tukaram Maharaj. So regularly Shivaji Maharaj would go to these saintly personalities and take guidance from them. In fact, and they gave guidance to them, but in a very detached way. They would never interfere then later on in the political affairs. And we see that in this pastime also. In the previous verse it is mentioned that the saintly personalities were sitting and discussing that we can see that thieves and rogues are now becoming prominent because King Vena is dead. And they could have, Prabhupada explains, they could have actually even killed all the thieves and rogues with their own mantra powers, just as they were able to kill King Vena. But they chose not to do so. Because they realize that that is the duty of the ruling king. That is not our duty. To kill, to interfere in the politics or the running of the kingdom. And then they thought of second alternative of how we can install a good king on the throne. So same way, even Tukaram Maharaj and Ramdas Swami, they would give advice to Shivaji Maharaj, but they would never interfere in the running of the kingdom. They would be completely detached and they would still have time to do their own bhajan. They both were great saints, so they were able to do their own bhajan. So whenever guidance was sought, they would give, but after that they would withdraw and they would go into their, what is their core duty of saints, to, you know, do their bhajan and spiritual realization. In fact, one Shivaji Maharaj was so fed up of the material world, because he was also quite saintly. He had very, in the mode of goodness, very devotional. So once he was feeling very fed up with material world, and he goes and tells Tukaram Maharaj, he says that I want to give up everything and I want to surrender to you. I just want to join you and with you I will stay in your ashram and I will also do devotional service and bhajan of the Lord. But Tukaram Maharaj again, because he was so detached. Now if some saint, he was not a proper devotee or a proper Vaishnava, he might have told, oh, this king will come, I will get lots of riches. You know, nowadays we see so-called saints in India especially. They have so many followers who sometimes, you know, prematurely give up things and follow them. And they bring their wealth with them. So people, you know, these so-called saints promote that. But Tukaram Maharaj told Shivaji. He said that, no, you do your duty as a Kshatriya and your duty is to protect and look after citizens like us. So do your duty as a Kshatriya so that we are able to do our duties as saints and we are able to then, you know, propagate Krishna consciousness or spiritual life in this in the kingdom. So he sent Shivaji Maharaj back with those instructions. Do your duty, obviously do devotional service, but at the same time do your protection. Protect these citizens so that they are then peacefully able to continue their devotional life. And if we have this proper combination, again Tukaram Maharaj told him, then we will be able, you will be able to rule your kingdom very well. And we see, in fact, in Prabhupada's life also, Prabhupada is also a saintly personality like Tukaram Maharaj and Ramdas Swami. So Prabhupada had that courage to, you know, write to the government to give guidance, to give spiritual guidance to them. In fact, during Prabhupada's time, Indira Gandhi was ruling the government. And Prabhupada actually wrote to Indira Gandhi. He wrote a letter to her saying that, very bold, he said that all the members of parliament, in the morning, they should first, for the first two hours, when they come, they should first sit and chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. They should chant 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and then only they should start their duties for the day. And when we read this in the Leelamrita, you know, we might tend to think that what impractical advice is Prabhupada giving to these modern day politicians who will have 2 hours to spare. But Prabhupada was actually drawing that courage from Vedic times. Because in the Vedic times, if we even see Krishna's, like in the Krishna book, Krishna's daily activities are there in one of the chapters. He also used to wake up early in the morning. He used to spend so much time doing yajnas and all that. And we see in the Vedic times, kings used to spend time for their devotional service and worship of the Supreme Lord. So why not the modern day politicians? Why can't they also spare time? And he had also written that there should be regular Harinam in the parliament. So Prabhupada was quite bold in giving all these suggestions. Because he knew that if people, this will bring people to the mode of goodness. If they are worshipping the Supreme Lord, and then their spiritual intelligence will increase, because of which they will be able to rule properly. And, you know, work for the welfare of the citizens. So he had that courage to do that. But obviously it was not implemented. No, you know, Indira Gandhi, I don't know if that letter even reached. So we see that Prabhupada also did that. And we see that in the modern times, that is not being implemented. So in the Vedic times, there was so much of guidance by the Brahmins, so much of proper care and attention that was given by the Kshatriyas in taking guidance from the Brahmins. And if it was not followed, then the Kshatriyas were losing. Like in Parshuram's pastime, we saw he had to overthrow all the Kshatriyas who were in the mode of passion and ignorance and ignoring the Brahminical layer. And even in King Vena's pastime, we saw how they had to overthrow. So a good governance means following the core value, having the common intention of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, being guided by the Brahminical layer, showing respect to the Vaishnavas. If this is properly followed, then these situations like King Vena would not come in the world. So we'll end the class here. It's time up. Any questions, comments, corrections? Yes, Mataji.
Mataji, you mentioned Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein. I don't know about Saddam Hussein, but I think for Muhammad Gaddafi it's a big injustice of the business, because from first hand I could see that he was not like that, that how he was projected in India. That was all. Today India is controlled by the people and protects the internet and presents what people want to know. And Muammar Gaddafi, he was really, really Dalit ruler. First, he had free education for all his citizens. Second, he had a free health system. He would for everyone, for every Indian who will marry, he would give them a flat. They were so rich country, they had so much gold. He will, in my country, there were coming a lot of Libyans who will, young Libyans who will study. He will pay for their scholarship. They will study for engineering, they will study for medical system. The government will pay for that. They did not have the common bill, the students didn't have to pay for this. Then I think I heard, it's either him or his parents, he said, I'm not going to live in a flat. They were living in the tent, either him or his parents, said, until the last Libyans gets a dwelling. They had so much gold, and he wanted what it represented, it says that he was overthrown by the government, by the Westerners, because he wanted to take the dollar out of the payment in the whole Africa, and he wanted to establish gold as a payment means. So they wanted, he was really not like that, what they are presenting.
Okay.
I think what has been represented is just to justify the actions of what they have done to him, and that what they have done to him, it was terrible.
Mm.
They really, they tortured him and they killed him really in a heinous way, which is not done. And he was, I know And a lot of people from my country, they were going in Libya, they were working there as engineers, they were working as doctors, as engineers, and they were having really good salaries and really good life, and they were really protected there.
Well, thanks again.
I'm saying this from personal first-hand experience, what I have heard from people who were going there and coming, because I studied with people who came from these countries.
Thank you for giving this insight, Mataji, because we see what is there in the media, on internet.
Well, media, we should take everything with grain of salt.
Yeah.
Because everything is controlled.
Yeah, because on the media, like it is projected that he did have, you know, quite a few bad habits, background, tyrannical, all that is projected. But yeah, if you have first hand information, then it's.
I think people, first of all, gives free education, free health system, he sponsored the education, he pays well those who come and work in his country. I don't think that person can be wrong.
Mm. Thank you, Mataji. Any other questions, comments, corrections? Yes, Mataji.
Your four principles of good governance, where is that from?
From various parts of the Bhagavatam. And also from studying the 10th canto we are studying right now. So many things are coming from there as well. And in the first canto especially, when we see Yudhishthir Maharaj ruling, and Bhishma Dev's instructions to Yudhishthir Maharaj, even there it is mentioned about how Yudhishthir Maharaj should rule and all that. So it was gathered from there. Okay, we'll end the class here. Granthra at Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.